This episode is brought to you by Madcore Festival. Probably Madrid's biggest and best festival, Madcore is returning once again this summer and it's going to be one to remember. Not only will there be massive names like Dua Lipa, Janelle Monáe, Bring Me the Horizon and The Killers playing, because who doesn't love a bit of Mr. Brightside after a day of pints in the sun? There'll also be tons of new buzzy acts like Nia Archives, Crawlers, Kneecap and Picture Parlour scattered across the bill too. Obviously, with it being in Madrid, there'll be plenty of ace Spanish artists to check out across the weekend. Plus, heading to a festival like this is the perfect chance to get a good dose of sunshine and culture, all while getting to watch some of your favourite bands and necking a cheeky sangria or two. This year's Madcore Festival takes place from the 10th to the 13th of July in Madrid, and tickets can be purchased now over at their website, madcorefestival.es. Hello, and welcome to the newest episode of Before They Knew Better, the podcast from DIY Magazine. My name is Lisa Wright, and here is my co-host and producer, Giles Bidder. Hello, Giles.
Hello!
Today, we are joined by one half of punk duo Bob Villain. His name is Bobby Villain with a Y. His other half is Bobby Villain with an IE, just to confuse things. But there will be no confusion today as we talk through the moments that made him into the, I'm going to say, one of the most incendiary, important, like a genuine, outspoken voice for the working classes, for black musicians, for black alternative musicians specifically, that's working in the circuit today. We recently had Bob Villain on the cover of our April issue, which you can still purchase now, FYI, and it was a truly inspiring chat. I think Bob Villain are a band that really have, I mean, sounds like a cliche to say they've got something to say, because all bands should have something to say, but they are standing up for marginalised voices and just sort of fighting the fight that we would want all punk bands to be fighting. So it is probably no surprise to learn that Bobby, as a youth, was similarly strong-minded, strong-willed. We spoke to him about his early forays into music when he was making demo CDs and hawking them around the streets of Ipswich. We spoke to him about a young trip to America, going out there on his own, being someone who sort of made these quite independent moves even from a young age. And as always with Before They Knew Better, we asked Bobby to bring in a song, a photo and an object to give us a little peep into his childhood and teenage years. Bob Villain's third album, Humble as the Sun, is out now. It is great, as you can imagine, and you really should go back and read our cover feature with the band. It is available online and from diymag.com/shop. But until then, we will leave you with the newest episode of Before They Knew Better with DIY Magazine and with Bobby Villain.
I was schooled in Ipswich, and then I would spend as much time as I could in London, and that was usually some weekends and school holidays and summer holidays and half term and stuff like that. It was my dad would take me, do you get me? So my dad was in London and has been his whole life in or at least has been my whole life, he's been in East London. Before that he was in various other places, but he came over from Jamaica and as a young boy, and then my mum is in Ipswich, and we would go up to London and then he'd drop us back, and we would them kids is shuttled back and forth sort of thing. So I was one of those kids, and but the drive up and down always provided me an opportunity to hear new music, because my dad was just blasted. He's a cool guy. Do you know what I mean? Even even now he's a cool dad. When I was younger, he was a cool dad. Had always had a nice car. Always had money in his pocket. He always blasting new music and like had the latest whatever CDs and had like a vinyl vinyl collection. Do you know what I mean? Had DJ equipment. He used to DJ a little bit. Like he was a bouncer. He worked on the doors at clubs and stuff. Like he was like a cool dad. Yeah. So it was always like nice. Do you know what I mean? Like getting picked up and then like speeding up to London and like hearing like I hear like DMX. Do you know what I mean? Like when I shouldn't be hearing that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like hearing lots of like garage music and house music, speed garage, and like just this kind of like, I don't know, kind of all the music that my dad was listening to.
Yeah.
That then somewhat informed what I would listen to and what I would, do you know what I mean? Go on to kind of, go on to use in Bob Villain, you know.
Yeah.
Were you sharing those new music discoveries with your friends at school? Were you the guy to go to? Were you telling people about this, these tunes you've been hearing?
Yeah, I was like, I think it just, no, so my dad always was like, you know, when like you burning CDs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So like my dad was always like, my dad was like, he's a hustler, and so he was always just like had like you know, get the bootleg CDs or DVDs from the man, the barbershop or whatever. And it's like,
absolutely classic.
He would always get them. And then like, he had like, whatever, like copier, where, so he'd copy this CD, that CD. And like, so I then cottoned onto that and I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Like I could buy, my friend has got this CD, I can take it and I could copy it.
Yeah.
And then I've got that CD. And so I was just doing that a lot of the time. And so when the kids at school or like the kids, like my dad's like girlfriend at the time of her kids, like had like an older son and he was listening to a lot of rap music. And so I'd hear that and I'd like, you know, always want to listen to it, try and copy the CDs or whatever. And my dad would be like, can't listen to that. It's got swear words in it. Da, 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 da. But then on the, drive back to Ipswich, he'll be playing DMX and it's like,
double standards.
Yeah. I just don't really understand like what I'm allowed to do and what I'm not really allowed to do.
Maybe the travel time is like you know, when it's like, oh, when you're on a flight or something like that, then like whatever, it's different up there, isn't it? Because you're just like sort of not really in either territory. It's like if you ate like calories don't like, count when you're in the air, that sort of thing. Maybe it's like swear words.
Waters.
Yeah, exactly. You're in the international waters between Ipswich and London.
It was more of a do as I say and not as I do type thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Possibly.
But it was cool, man. Like I like that. Like there's lots of like lots of little things that I heard on those drives and that I thought was, yeah, this is wicked.
Also, it's kind of nice because I think like loads of kids, you know, they'll like rebel against the things that their parents were listening to, or they kind of want to actively go in the opposite direction. Whereas like, you know, I had like my dad like listen to loads of cool stuff and like I grew up listening to like, you know, the Beatles and XTC and Frank Zappa and stuff like that. And I think I was just like very aware that this was like good music from the start and that I didn't really need to be sort of trying to act up and listening to other stuff because this is probably good stuff that I should be listening to. Like, were you always quite sort of like on board with what your parents would be playing in those like, situations?
Well, like, I feel very lucky that I had parents that were playing music that like I enjoyed and like they were quite, I suppose, like, my mum, especially, she was fairly young, I suppose. Like when we were coming of an age where we're listening to music and we're kind of like finding our own taste. So, you know, and me, like if my dad was doing it, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That must be cool. Do you know what I mean? Because my dad is doing it. So, you know, I was listening to that stuff. But then like my mum would listen to like a lot of like garage music and stuff and like a lot of like R&B and stuff. Like there was lots of like, you know, Mary J. Blige and like Aaliyah was played a lot and like even like she played this like listen to like garage music, a Heartless Crew and those sort of things, like the Crisp Biscuit CDs and all of these things. But and then like she also then like would give me like, I remember her giving me Sandinista like
Bash.
Yeah, like, I remember being like, you should listen to this, and like listening to a lot of like Alabama Free and like that sort of stuff. And so, and like she'd listen to like Green Day, and there was like Offspring CDs in the house, and like Blink 182 CDs in the house. But then there was also like D12 and Eminem albums in there, and 50 Cent and The Streets and Dizzy Rascal. Like,
cool, mom.
There was all these kind of like, exactly. There was all these like things where, like, I remember going into HMV with her and like after school one day, and she's just looking for CDs, like for herself, really. Like, she's not buying me now, but she's looking CDs, and she's like, I remember her, she saw The Streets album, and it had the Mercury sticker on it. She's like, oh, it's got like the Mercury sticker on, like this one must be good, because she didn't know The Streets. Like, a lot of people didn't know The Streets at that time. So she's like, oh, this one must be good. And we got it home, and I think I took it and was like, yeah, I'm listening to this now. Like, she's not going to listen to it right now. I took it, put it on, and I was like, you know, it's one of them things where you're like, boom, mine. It's just like, what is happening? What is this thing? I don't know what it is, because he's not rapping and he's not singing. And he's not emceeing. But he's kind of doing all of those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's not like garage music, and it's not rap music, and it's not dance music, but it kind of has elements of all these things in. It was just like a real like head pop moment where I was like, I just don't know what this is, but I know that I know that it's incredible, and I know that like I'm in love with this thing. And then obviously he becomes the streets, and like, you know, we all know him, but at that moment it was like, yeah, this is incredible. But that's a, you know, it's like those little moments where I remember like having with my parents, you know, my mum, my dad, kind of finding music. And then I got a little older and started you know, buying CDs myself, or getting friends to buy them if they had the parental advisory sticker on, and started getting my older friends to buy it.
Was it like an actual, like, would they ID?
They wouldn't ID you, but like, I remember taking some things to the counter before and then being like, nah, we can't sell you this. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, damn. So like, I remember like buying Ghostface Killer, his Iron Man album. And I had to get my friend to buy it for me because it had the parental advisory sticker. And I remember playing it, listening to it at home, and my mum being like, what is this? There's a track on there called Wildflower. And it is, I mean, if you listen to it now, and I listen to it now, I'm like, fuck, you know. My mum was right, bro.
She was right.
Like, my mum was right. It's a very sexually explicit track.
Right, and okay.
I remember being like, what is this? It's disgusting. What are you listening to?
Why,
and I'm like,
do this?
What? And I was like, he's a grown man.
Yeah, she's, but
like,
you're not.
He's a grown man. Like, yeah. She's like, I don't care. Turn it off.
This is the thing with so many, like, there were so many times as a kid when, like, you'd see the sort of parental advisory things. You'd be like, screw that. I'm really grown up. And then as soon as you'd watch it, you'd think, they really were right, and I'm really scarred, and I really wish that I hadn't watched that. And like, I just think half of the time you think that you're being like cool and naughty by watching things, but actually they really had a point that it just actually really wasn't appropriate as a kid to sort of be exposed to those things.
But for me, I was like, I would see it and I'd just be like I wouldn't necessarily like feel scarred or whatever, but it would just like open my mind. It's like, like, what does that mean? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then I'd become intrigued by it. So like, if it was something I didn't understand, I'd just become intrigued by it, and I'd just be on the hunt to find. I remember like listening to a lot of dancehall music, which again, quite sexually explicit. And then like thinking, what does that mean? And like trying, and then like kind of like, you know, as you get older and you start to like, you know, develop an ear for it, and you're surrounded by people that are also growing up around it. And it's like, start to understand, like, oh, that's what that means, and that's what that means. And so I was just always intrigued, like anything that was like kept behind the door.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Whether it's for a sticker or whatever, I just wanted to know, like, well, what's behind that?
Yeah. Press the red button.
Yeah, I just want to find out.
Yeah. Are you really ready for the dance tonight? Tonight, champagne, I live the good life. Ladies,
queen, where you're looking, Chris. Please, you go, wanna be like this. Always the tune that you brought in that represents or reflects your sort of youth is Pay As You Go Cartel. And I'd never heard this before.
Me have you neither. Heard of Lisa? No, not in my repertoire. But I listened to it and was like, oh, this takes me right back to like sort of, I don't know, I guess like early secondary school, sort of early noughties garage time. Is that the era Hatchbacks. That we're talking?
Yeah. Because I have an older sister. My older sister was like showing me a lot of this sort of stuff. So like, this is like the stuff that, you know, my mum and my dad didn't know this, what this was. They didn't know that this existed, you know, unless it was like, again, had a Mercury Prize sticker on it, then they would know about this thing. But in terms of like pirate radio stations and, you know, cassette tapes being copied from peer to peer and garage raves and stuff like that, like they didn't know about that, but my older sister, she knew about that stuff, and so she was the one that put me onto all of that sort of stuff. And she was, there's this crew and there's this crew and then this, and it's like she was the one that was opening my eyes to a lot of that stuff, you know. She helped me with like my first write like my first lyrics, and she helped me learn what it is to like to MC on bar. Like she teach me about like catching a drop and all of that stuff. Like she taught me about all of that stuff.
Was Wiley in Pay As You Go Cartel?
Yeah. So Wiley was in Pay As You Go Cartel, and he's in the video, and he's in the video and on that song, and his part specifically on that song and in that video is the part that like, that is the, it flicked the switch for me that has just been on ever since. Like when I saw that video on TV and I heard his verse on it, and the way that he was MCing on there is unlike everybody else on there. Like some of the other MCs on there are still kind of got an American accent, because that was a thing that a lot of UK MCs and rappers were doing. But he doesn't. He's got a very British accent. Mm. And even the way that like he moved, like when he's moving across, he's on the rooftop and he's moving across the roof, like the images burn into my head in a way that is just insane. Like I see the way he moves across as he's sitting at the camera, and it's kind of, and he's, the way that he kind of like, it's like he's floating across the screen. It just had such, I can't really explain it, but it's had such a profound effect on me that the second that I saw it and the second that I heard it, that's the thing. Like that is the thing. I don't know what it is. I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know where they're doing it. I don't know what that is. But that is the thing that like I'm going to do. I need to find out about that. And not just that, but that man specifically, I need to find out what he's doing. Because his was very different, you know? There's four or five MCs on that. And it's like his, you know, and as it would be, because he's kind of like he's the godfather of grime music. So like he is there from the very beginning, from the inception of it. And I was like, that's the thing. And it was like a grime MC on a garage tune, essentially. Do you know what I mean? At that very, that point where it was going from garage music to grime music. And he was right there as it crossed over. And I thought, wow, don't know what's happening.
Where did you go from that then? Was that like the start of you kind of trying to do your own stuff, or like trying to go and like go to shows where he was playing, or what was the next steps after that light bulb dinged?
So for me, because I was like, I was young, it was hard. I couldn't like go to the shows and stuff like that because like they were, you know, they're raves and they're.
How old were you at this point?
London. When I found that, when I discovered that, I might have been like, 12, like a maybe like a 12 or so, I think, maybe.
Yeah, okay, so like, so still young.
Yeah. And so you know, I couldn't go to any of those raves or anything, and like, you know, my sister had gone to a couple of them and she knew that stuff, but I couldn't go. And so for me it was just about like getting on LimeWire or whatever LimeWire. It was, you know. And and finding more of this stuff. And then, and like my, I said, my sister was, she knew, she was like, oh yeah, that's this crew and that's this crew and this is this instrumental and there's this one, this is a real big instrumental that everybody's on. So she was kind of like putting me up on all of that stuff. And then it was, and then like I say, she helped me kind of like write my first lyrics and she helped me like learn to MC and catch a drop and all of that stuff. And then I just very quickly was like, cool, I got lyrics, I know how to like catch a drop, I know how to like spit on bar, I'm going to MC on this open mic. And I went and did that. My sister taught me, like, I remember like kind of 20 minutes before leaving the house, she's like, run through it again. and so she put on the beat, and I think it's Sticky Triplets 3 maybe was the beat that she put on her computer, and was like, do it again. And she's like, here. And then yeah, I was like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then I walked out the door and I went to open mic at like an under 18s thing, and I did it, and I kind of messed up the lyrics. And I was like, fuck. And then I was like, I'm going again. Let me do it again. I was like, grab the mic again. I'm doing it again. And I started again, you know. But that was
what,
like,
not the same night?
Yeah, same night. And so
did
that
you
was
get
like,
through the full song and go back yet, or did you stop halfway through?
So yeah, like I messed up like not even halfway through, like a couple lines in, and was like, fuck. And I remember just looking in the crowd and thinking, nah, that's not gonna be,
yeah, this isn't it,
I'm leaving here with. And so I was like, they stopped the beat or whatever, and I was like, let me go again, I'm going again. And so I did it and I got through it, but I think it's just the nerves. Do you know what I mean? Was just in,
yeah, of course. I mean, you're what, like a 13-year-old or something doing their first ever gig?
I think I would have been like 12. I think I would have been like 12 years old. I was mad, very, very young.
That's
like,
amazing.
Yeah, very, very young. Yeah, very, very young. 11.
Would that make you like the youngest one there, or were there lots of other, was like most people
I think I was the youngest one there, but there was like, because I was always the youngest one in the room, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like really, like, or like the youngest one on stage and stuff. So, but I didn't get through to like the finals or nothing like that. Do you know what I mean? I was out the first round. I was out. But from that moment, I knew I can go on stage. Like my fear of going on stage was just conquered in that one night. As for, okay, cool, I went on, fumbled. That's the worst thing that can, like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, you do it and you're like, oh, okay, that's a thing that can happen, but actually I can recover and I can do it again, this better. And then from that moment, I was just hooked. And then from that point, I was like, I'm writing. I'm like, so excited, you know? And I'm like, yo, we should make a crew, and trying to get other people on board. Like, we should do this thing. We should do this. And I was always that one as well, like organizing things and, you know, we should make an album, we should make a mixtape, we should do this, whatever, you know.
Did you manage to like get enough kids together to have a crew when you were young?
What
were they called?
I'm not gonna do that.
Not the names of the people, the name of the crew.
No, name of the crew. Okay, I don't even want to say that, because kind of, it's all cringe. It's cringe now.
No, it's,
cringe
it's now, great.
That's not, it's cringe. But I will say that, like, when we did that, I was always the one, like, I was the one recording the music, and I was the one, like, mixing the music as well. Like, say mixing, like, I didn't really know about mixing all that much, but I was, like, figuring it all out. But, you know, I had, like, a little, very primitive setup, and we had a microphone we put in the wardrobe, and, like, you know, we'd record these songs, and then I would make them into songs, you know, I'd like take this person's verse and take this person's verse, and I'd make them into a song, and we'd write, and I'd say, yeah, we're going to write a song about this thing. And then we'd write the song. And I made with a friend, Joe, he helped me and him together. We made a mixtape with this crew that we had put together. He was a DJ and a producer. And so we made a mixtape with this crew that we'd put together, but we also made a DVD, because that was a big thing at the time as well. You had like DVD culture of like you know, with all these grime MCs and these different grime crews and all of these things, like they were on DVD and that was how their face was getting out there.
Mm.
So it's like the first time you saw, you know, the first time you saw what your favorite MC looked like was probably on a DVD, because a lot of their stuff wasn't, you know, wasn't getting played on TV, and Channel U wasn't really about like that at that time. So we made a DVD to be like, yeah, this is how people are going to see our face as well. And so we shot a whole DVD, made a whole mixtape, made a cover to it, back cut and pressed it all onto CDs, went to a shop and got like got the cover all printed out and stuff. We sat there, we cut it out, we burnt the CDs at home.
Love it.
And we sold it in the street for like maybe like £3-4 a pop, do you know what I mean? And was like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's CD, you play it on the thing, but also if you put it in your into your computer, you double click on the thing and you can watch the DVD on there yeah. as well. And so we had filmed people from like our crew, but we had also filmed other people from other crews and put them on this DVD as well. So then nice. Like it was like, there's this MC on there and this MC on there and this MC on there. And then when we was doing that, and then when we sold those, I realized, oh, okay, like we could do that. And then, so then again, I made another mixtape, which was like my solo mixtape. And then I did that and we sold that in the street. And like, we just kept on doing this. And I remember like, you know, I have like £50 in my pocket and be like, I'm rich. Yeah. I'm rich from music. Ipswich is as many problems as it has, like it has huge amount, or it had at least like a huge amount of talent there, like even kind of like, even now there are artists there that like it's just unfortunate that they won't necessarily be heard because they're in Ipswich, do you know what I mean? But like but you know, when we were growing up, we had like Hectic Boys, Alliance Squad, and like all these kind of like grime and garage crews that like they had a couple in terms of like that world. And at that time, like Hectic Squad had a hit on Channel U. Like it was huge. Like everywhere I went, if you said, "Are you from Ipswich?" they would sing that song to you. Like, and I'm talking about everywhere, everywhere. And even now, if I meet like people of a certain age that listened to that music at that time, you say, "Oh yeah, I grew up between Ipswich," and they say, "Hectic Squad, what do you know about it?" They would sing the song. It's like, rah, it's like, it was all over Channel U. It was all over. It's like, I knew that there was so much talent there. Even now, like there was when drill started getting big a couple years ago, there was a like a drill crew in Ipswich that I was watching, you know, like
wicked.
I'm so far removed from that now, but I'm watching. I'm like, yeah, these kids are incredible. Like they're just as good as anybody. Like they had different members, and this one had this personality and this one. But you know, I mean, like they ended up, they ended up getting into a madness, and some of them are serving life sentences now, which is unfortunate. But
you must have known Hack Baker from Bomb Squad.
So he's like East London, like he's East
Channel
London.
U, because they had they were like number one on Channel U for that year, weren't they? Bomb Squad.
Yeah, they were. But like we were very focused on. Like we would watch Channel U to be like to see like what's good, like what is like the new song or whatever. Mm. But we were focused on like this thing, Ipswich. Do you know what I mean? Like we're gonna make that. We, you know, that thing. Oh, put Ipswich on the map. I want to be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so everybody was kind of like focused on that because, you know, London had their thing, and then like, you know, you get like a crew from Birmingham and a crew from Manchester, they'd be on Channel U, and like really Hectic Squad were the ones for Ipswich that like they were that crew, you know. Sweet. But then after that it was like everybody wanted to be that.
Yeah. I mean, but even just having like one group of people that have like done it, that are close, you know, that you kind of see, you know, maybe you see them like in your area, and it makes these things feel possible. Like, it's not just this unattainable dream that only people that live in London that have access to, you know, all that stuff can do. It's like it's so pivotal, I think, to see
100%.
It in your world.
100%. I would see them, you know, and they have like the like nice trainers on, they have like the nice tracksuit, they have like, you know, Sovereign ring or whatever, and
nice.
I was like, yeah, these guys are cool, man. Like, they are cool, you know.
Also, the thing that young kid. The thing that I love about that story as well is like going right back. It's like your sister also sounds like a legend. Like the fact that she was like the one that was teaching you everything when you were young. Like, was she like, were you super close like the whole time? Like, does she do music now?
Nah. She doesn't do music or anything. But she was just, I think she was just into it. It was like the big thing at that time, and like it was exciting. It was like just the new youth culture. Do you know what I mean? And it was fresh and it was exciting, and like there was so much uncharted territory with it, because it was, you know, we'd just never seen it before. Like, you know, I think the ability to make music in your bedroom, that had just entered into the world, you know, and like people were getting like cracked software and like, you know, downloading software and stuff like that, to downloading music production software and making music on like their computer at home or in a youth club or whatever it was. And so I think it was everything was new and fresh, and it just allowed people to be so free and express themselves and like experiment and stuff. And so I think at that time it was just all very exciting. I don't really know. I think obviously it's like pretty mad that moment is fueled. It's like the catalyst of it is like a shift in technology. Do you know what I mean? And it's like the access to this technology, the access to music production software. And then what does a whole generation of like kids do with that software when you give it to them? Whereas I don't know if we'll, I suppose maybe we'll see that, you know, maybe we'll see that with some like clever use of AI or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Maybe we'll see that, but it does seem like, you know, it does seem like it was the last of those things where it's like
everything moved just so fast. Talking of technology, the object that you have chosen to bring in is the greatest bit of kit that any kid wanted back in the 90s. The Talkboy from Home Alone. I mean,
that was a wonderful segue as well.
Thank you. thanks. But yeah, I mean, like, that must have been, was that like the greatest Christmas present that you've ever received?
So it was my younger brother, like he's a year and a bit younger than me. He got that, I think, for Christmas maybe, or like his birthday or something, like 1 year. And yeah, I remember us just thinking like, this is from Home Alone, bro. This is from Home Alone.
Credit card, you got it.
Oh yeah. Just again, another thing, like, we can record our voice and listen to it back. And so we would just like, we would record, like we'd, you know, have things that we'd like, lyrics or whatever that we'd written, and we'd just record it on there. Or we would like do, we'd do like pretend interviews with each other of like and ask questions and record it on this thing. It was just like, I don't know, I suppose it's just like, again, so like a technology, so I can talk into this thing and then I can hear it back and I can hold it in my hand. And then there was, I think, another year he got like, there was a Talkboy pen.
What's that?
Oh my God, I remember like those.
Yeah, so he had a Talkboy pen that like you could record onto and then listen to. And,
yeah,
James Bond shit.
Yeah, so he, you know, he got one of those, I think, get like, you know, the next year or whatever, and we just used to like have fun and just like, you know, record dumb stuff on it.
Do you do any pranks?
Nah, not really pranks with it. It was mostly like, yeah, we kind of like, even though we were kind of being silly, we kind of took things quite serious. So at least like I did. I was like, let's record our verses with this. Let's record like, let's pretend to do an interview or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like,
so, it's creative.
Yeah, exactly. We were being creative with it. Like we weren't like, I don't know. I don't know what its purpose was for. I don't know if it's like, because I don't know. Because I think about this when I asked, oh, can you think of an object or whatever? And I thought of the talk boy. I was thinking, I don't know if this was something that they created for the movie and then like marketed afterwards of like, this is the talk boy from Home Alone. Or if it existed before and they put it in the movie and the movie made it popular. Like, I don't know which.
Yeah,
I don't know which one comes
first. If they market it through the movie, that's fucking smart marketing.
Yeah, because I suppose like the film, when they're writing the film, like he needs to be able to, because he's got that, where he records the Angels with Dirty Faces film or whatever. He's like, yeah, you're a filthy animal. It's like, he needs to have a device by which he can record and think. So maybe, I was thinking, I wonder if they made it for the film or if that was a thing, a product that already existed and it was popularized through the film. I have no idea.
They can't have made it for the film, surely. Like, that would be bonkers if, like, Home Alone advanced the whole of recording technology for the world.
Yeah, it's a pretty mad thing. But, like, I remember, like, I watched some programs about how, I mean, it's different, but, like, how things like, things of like the 90s, like cartoon programs, they would make a cartoon with like to sell the toy. Like they had this toy, but whatever, they might have had like He-Man toys, but there's no show. There's just a toy, but there's no show. And so they're like, well, how do we sell it? And so they're like, we'll create a TV show. And we'll sell it, and we'll be able to sell to sell the toy. We'll create a TV show, and obviously, I know Home Alone didn't create Home Alone to sell a talk boy. But I'm thinking, like, I don't know,
working back.
It's interesting to think of, like, like how people market and
what an elaborate marketing thing.
We've got this great photo of you, Bobby.
Yeah,
that is a heavy motorcycle.
Yo, that's a big boy motorcycle.
That's the background.
There's a dangerous thing that
so motorcycle. Chuffed as well. You look like you're very, very aware that you've got something pretty good.
You have no idea. The thing is, so the picture. Oh my gosh. So I had a motorcycle before, I had a 125 motorcycle, and it was a Honda NSR, and it looked incredible. And, you know, I had saved up to buy this thing, and I remember, like, you know, getting it and, like, putting it round, and, like, everyone's like, oh, yo, it's got a motorcycle. It's like, it was crazy. Do you know what I mean? It was crazy. And whatever, something happened. I was late night. I was out, and a taxi hit me.
Oh God!
And so I come off that Honda that I had, and it wrote off the bike. It had to scrap it. It was done. Whatever, I got like I got some money from insurance, you know, because it weren't my fault. I went on holiday. I went to Chicago by myself, which at the time was the murder capital of America. I didn't realize that at the time. But then I went there on a shopping trip by myself, and I remember going into the bank. And I was like, you know, obviously adult is 21 over there. And I think I was maybe 18. Was that, I know that, 17 or 18? I remember going to America and I was so young that like even the immigrant, the customs people were like, what are you doing here? I was like, I'm just here to do like shopping. I like Chicago culture. Like, I like, you know, I like the cool kids, the Kanye West and like all these rappers that I'd heard of, like from Chicago, Common and all of these things. So I was like, so I've just come here to see what it's like. I went there and I did this shopping trip. I did stayed out there for like a week or 10 days. I went and watched like the Cubs and the Chicago Bulls. And I was like,
yeah,
I was like, front, do you get me? And I came back and was like, I don't have my bike. Like I need my bike. And so because I'd written it off, and so I bought that one that I'm sitting on in the picture when I got back from Chicago. And the reason why I'm talking about Chicago is because the shorts, the trainers, the socks, the t-shirt that I'm wearing, that I bought all of them in Chicago. So like, I will, and like, bought all of them in Chicago. So like the What's Up jock, and then I had like the trainers to match it, the like Bugs Bunny, Bugs Bunny Jordan ones, like the hair ones. And I remember just, that's why I look so chuffed on that bike.
What an absolute time.
I was like, I am living the absolute life, bro. Like, I'm living life. And that's why I look on that bike. And my friend Calvin took that photo. He took that photo because I was like, I had a 125 and then I brought that 600 and it's cocktail color. Do you know what I mean? The cocktail color, 600.
And it's like GTA style. Like,
it does.
You see
the cocktail colors, like the white and the purple and the light kind of turquoise on it.
It's snazzy.
It's a beautiful bike. And I remember I was looking on Auto Trader. I didn't have the paperwork you need to drive it. So I had the guy bring it from wherever he was. He brought it and he dropped it off because I was like, I can't ride that on the motorway to bring that back. Because I don't know, I've never ridden on the motorway. That's, do you get terrifying. Me? So, and I was like, this is 600. I've never ridden on the motorway before. But I got him to bring it. He dropped it off, paid him, whatever. And then and I was just ragging that thing around. And I was like, just on top of the world. And I had ear to ear, smile, ear to ear. Do you know what I mean? Like,
with your then, Bugs Bunny. Did you say Bugs Bunny Bugs trainers? Bunny,
there was a collaboration, I suppose, between like Warner Brothers and Air Jordan because of the
Space Jam.
Exactly. So I had like, yeah, they were called the Hair Ones. Instead of the Air Ones, they were called the Hair Ones. And so like they had Bugs Bunny doing the Jumpman pose on there, and then they had the t-shirt as well. So I was like, when I saw it in Chicago, I was incredible. Like, yeah, gotta have those. And so that's why I look so happy on that picture. I loved that bike. Absolutely loved that bike.
Are you still a biker?
Nah. They're dangerous.
They are dangerous.
They're dangerous.
I feel like there's...
I can't do that now. I can't do that now.
Okay.
Young man's game.
But back in the day. A young man's game.
I've got family. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, then I weren't thinking about nothing. But when I had my daughter, I was like, I can't do certain things that I was doing before. I can't live that way. Mm-hmm. I can't, you know, I'll put myself at it. Like, and I know that my friend, his brother passed away on a bike. Like, again, like growing up, like I knew another guy who's like, whose close friend, like became paralyzed from coming off the bike. I was a little more cavalier than I am now.
Yeah, of course you were, because you were like 17. Like, if you can't if you can't be a bit 18. Reckless and gung-ho when you're 17, then
when can you?
That's I think if that's a snapshot of just like, I am absolutely living the dream right now. what a good moment. I mean, like, how did you, when you went out to Chicago, was that like, because I mean, that's quite a scary thing to do as well, to just go across the world on your own as a teenager and just like be on holiday on your own. Like just traveling on your own is quite sort of a bold thing to do. Like, do you remember just being like fine with it?
Yeah, everyone thought I was mental because they're like, you don't know anyone in Chicago. It's not like I'm going to like Magaluf. Do you know what I mean? Where everybody else would like whatever, where I want to go to. I like the rap music that comes out of Chicago, so I'm just going to go to Chicago. and Chicago ain't really it's not a holiday destination. Do you get me? It's not somewhere like you go for holidays. It's just like
fit right in with your talk.
It's like. Yes, yeah, it's just weird. Yeah, I suppose I would, you know, that's in Chicago. But it's not like a... Right, that's a full circle moment, you know, that's mad. But yeah, like, it's not somewhere you go on holiday, but I just was fascinated by the culture that at the time that was coming out of it, and I was like, I just want to go and check it out. And so, yeah, I don't think I was thinking about it really. I weren't really scared about it because I was like, I suppose because I was
fun.
Like, it was fun. I was living a certain way in, again, I had like a youthful naivety to me, but I was living a certain way in England, and I was like, I'm fine here, bro. Like no one does anything to me when I'm here, and I've got money in my pocket and I'm riding around, like whatever. And then I went there and I was thinking, kind of like, I'm cool here, like I'll be fine. Do you get what I mean? And I was fine. Yeah, but yeah. I remember looking on the, like, I remember being, you know, seeing the news or whatever when I was in the hotel, and then saying, like, it was maybe April, and they were like, this is the 200 and something murder that has happened this year in Chicago. And I was like, whoa, it's mad out here. Bro. It's crazy. Yeah, yeah. You know?
But it's different.
Yeah, it's different. Exactly.
It's different. But yeah.
I had a ball out there, man. I was living.
Bold.
I think the thing that sort of come across throughout all of these stories is like just an absolute like curiosity and following those sort of like interests and things that sort of pique your, you know, things that spark that little thing inside you, just like absolutely going for it, which is obviously the way that you make a successful DIY band happen. But everything makes a lot of sense now about the sort of trajectory of Bob Villain, having listened to all of those music influences, but also just like the way that you are as a person.
I couldn't wait. Sounds like cliche or whatever, but I couldn't wait for the world to come to me. I just wanted to go and see things. So I remember like when I was going to Chicago before I went, I was asking my friends like, yo, do you want to come? You should come. Da, da, da. And all of them just thought I was crazy, or like they either thought I was crazy or they thought, oh, he's just talking about it, but he's not actually going to go and do it. And so I just, you know, no one wanted to come. So I thought, okay, fine. I'll just book my ticket. I'm just going to go by myself. And I did the same thing when I went to Jamaica. Again, not really somewhere that you go, I suppose, by yourself. And like, but I didn't stay in the resort. Or, you know what I mean? Like I stayed like in Kingston, and like, I was, you know, again, I asked friends like, yo, you should come. You want to come? And they just thought like, you're crazy going out there. What are you doing out there by yourself? You don't know no one out there, whatever. Yeah. And it's like, what they thought, it's not really going to go. And then I went, and I was young when I went out there, didn't know anybody out there, but had a great time and saw, you know, where my father comes from, and like, you know, kind of like the gully and the trip, like where he grew up and stuff like that. But I was just curious about, you know, everything out there, and still am. I just want to see everything. If there's a door that's shut, I just want to peek my head in and see what's in there, you know.
Thank you to Bobby. Thank you for listening. And if you want to listen back to some of the recent episodes of Before They Knew Better, we have had some sterling chats with C-Matt, with the Cribs, with Everything, with Cat Burns. And there's a whole season one that you can go back and have a listen to as well, which has got 12 more episodes with some of your favourite DIY featuring artists. Go back and give those a listen. And while you're at it, why not give us a like and a subscribe? If you subscribe to Before They Learn You Better. You will get every episode straight into your podcast inbox on a Tuesday morning. We are about a third of the way through the second series of this podcast, so you've still got a solid chunk of episodes left, and we will see you next week for the next episode of Before They Knew Better with DIY Magazine. This episode is brought to you by Rock in Rio Lisboa, the sister event to Brazil's iconic music festival Rock in Rio. The Portuguese leg of the event is set to celebrate its 20th anniversary with one of its biggest editions yet, and over 80,000 attendees across its 4 days, of which some of them could be you. Taking place over 2 weekends this June, some of music's biggest names will be taking to the stage in Lisbon. We're talking Ed Sheeran, we're talking Doja Cat, even the Jonas Brothers are getting in on the action. And with each day specially curated by genre, there's literally something for everyone. I went to The Town in Rio last year, which is curated by the same people as Rock in Rio, and it was, I'm going to say, one of the wildest festivals I've ever been to. This year's Rock in Rio Lisboa takes place on the 15th, 16th, 21st and 22nd of June, and tickets can be purchased now via their website, rockinriolisboa.pt.